Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Welding instructor Alex DeClaire knows VR training platforms like ForgeFX help students master their skills.
There's a big learning curve with welding. Virtual reality simulates that exact muscle memory that they need.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Understand
that? Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Gentlemen, I know what everyone in college football is talking about, and that, of course, is the hire at the University of Buffalo. I mean, clearly,
the university,
right?
At Buffalo, Stephen. Get hip.
I'm good. When I say Pete Limbo, I know basically the college football world just lights a fire. Everyone gets very, very excited, right? Everybody's like, oh my God, Pete Limbo, the special teams coordinator from Maryland? Everyone gets very jazzed up about this. When this hire happened recently, Pete Limbo, there you go, Fear the Turtle. Pete Limbo replaced head coach Mo Lindquist, who went to Alabama. In addition to Mr. Lindquist going to Alabama as a former head coach, by the way, he's not going to be the head coach at Alabama, of course, Kalen DeBoer is. Another G5 head coach, Kane Womack from the University of South Alabama, left his job to work with Mo on the defensive side of the ball. I, of course, as a G5 stan and purist, received this information as the world is ending. I really have started to feel like conferences are separating. And I'm not going to say Power 5. I'm not going to say Power 2. I'm not going to say Power 4. But conferences are separating in a way in which that even the old facades that we used to kind of like wink at, like, oh, okay, right, how long have we said the University of Louisiana Monroe is technically in the same category as Alabama? We've always kind of laughed about that. What we're seeing is something a little bit more seismic for all of the mitigating factors and crazy things that are happening underneath the feet of college football. Long story short, I've kind of been convinced that like G5 football might be doomed. So I did a case study and I used the MAC specifically. The reason why I use the MAC is the MAC is the most consistent over time for the story that I would like to tell today. So if you're a Sun Belt fan, if you're an American Athletic Conference fan, that's great. You guys keep changing your identity. I really just wanted to focus on the MAC for our case study. Is the MAC doomed, gentlemen? I don't know still, but I do have some information to provide you. But first, this is Split Zone Duo. My name is Stephen Godfrey.
I'm Alex Kirshner.
I'm Richard Johnson. And this is 60 Minutes. Tick, 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 tick.
That was good.
Before we get started with our theory, or my theory, by the way, this was just so much Wikipedia. We want to thank our friends at Homefield. How many of us are repping at Homefield at present? We have an alma mater rep. Is that what we're doing, Alex?
Yeah, I'm wearing a University of Maryland charcoal Homefield crew. One of my favorites.
Nice.
In fact, I wore it as part of a grout fit just the other day out on the town with kind of like a charcoal short as well. And I really felt with the scene.
A grout fit?
A charcoal fit, if you will.
What is a grout fit?
A gray outfit. Like when
all
you go
gray.
Yeah, when you
all
go gray sweats on the top, gray sweats on the bottom.
Why does that need abbreviation?
You've never heard the term grout fit? What are you talking about?
Do you know what grout is?
Yes, the tiling in the shower.
Yes.
Okay.
That's not right. What they're
I am wearing
here.
To keep with the spirit, I was digging through my Homefield wardrobe, which is in my office. It's not even in my actual closet. It's in my office. And I did not have a MAC shirt, so I'll have to rectify that soon. I do have University of Texas at El Paso, so shout out to whatever conference UTEP ultimately ends up in once the world stops changing.
You know, honestly,
thanks
Steven,
to our friends at Homefield.
UTEP is kind of the most mid-American school of them all, you know, from the perspective of sort of being directly between two countries in North America.
This is very true. Thank you. I also want to thank our friends at Nokian. folks, I'm very excited because I have Nokian tires on every vehicle I own, which is two, but that's still a lot, right? I have it on my beautiful antique GMC Sierra. I also have it on the minivan that shuttles my human beings back and forth across the city of Nashville, as well as most of the American Southeast on a good clip. We thank our friends at Nokian for their support. If you like what you're about to hear, you can thank me. But also, you can go to Substack. You can go to splitzoneduo.com and become a subscriber today. Boys, we get all kinds of fun stuff if we, in the hypothetical sense, go over and hand our money to Split Zone Duo. What do we get, Alex?
Well, you get a lot of bonus podcasts. You get newsletters from me. You get to help us make the show. We are predominantly always going to be a subscriber-first supported publication. You get community opportunities, Q&A opportunities, live chats, things of that sort. And I have to emphasize, a lot of podcasts. So it really is some of the greatest value in college football media, in my opinion.
You get to hang out with your parasocial pal at 38 Godfrey. That's me, almost every week on The Single Wing, which is a subscriber-exclusive show that you guys help build. Subject matter, if you're listening, if you're listening and you're a subscriber, you know what I'm talking about. Subject matter varies wildly. We also are excited about the return of various other recurring SCD series, but you know, we'll have announcements on that soon. All right, boys. SCD promo code, by the way. Are we still using the SCD promo code? Is that still hot, Alex?
That's still
if
hot.
If you go to home field right now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's completely hot. I mean, it's all the trend in the world. SCD 20 for 20% off your first order. If you have not yet gotten on the home field train, no time like the present.
All right, Alex, before I show my homework here and get y'all's reaction, you would like to make a point.
Yeah, I think it's curious that you took the departure of Mo Linguist from Buffalo to Alabama as a Matt could be doomed moment, when I actually think that the bigger Mac is doomed seeming moment around a coaching change involving Pete Lembo himself, by the way, was a while ago now. It was in 2016 when Pete Lembo, the very same Pete Lembo who is now going to be Buffalo's head coach, had been the head coach at Ball State at that time and left to be the special teams and tight ends guy at Maryland. Like, at least Mo Linguist left his MAC job to go to holy goddamn Alabama after a few years of not winning a lot of games and generally looking pretty fireable, falling well short of Lance Leipold before him at Buffalo. Whereas Pete Lembo left to go to Maryland.
So we're going to get into
head coaching job.
I'll get into Pete in a second because there are other instances of this. The problem is exactly that. It really is based on your perspective. When the Linguist defection, if you want to call it, happened, it was much more of a sort of, I'm just going to fold my arms because I knew I was right all along. The suspicion or the sort of initial concern came from when Sean Lewis was failing to get jobs. Now, Sean Lewis was the head coach at Kent State. Sean Lewis had a losing record as head coach at Kent State because, for reasons I will describe shortly, you should not be a head coach in Northeast Ohio. If Kent State or Akron call you, you need to not do that. We'll get into that in a second. However, Sean Lewis was running one of the most effective, at least statistically, offenses in the country. We all know how offense dominant the hiring minds can be in college football. And I took this as a kind of warning that maybe the idea or the brand or the quality of MAC football was being sort of pushed off into a corner by hiring committees, by consultants, by athletic directors, and by the media.
Godfrey,
so that was the initial genesis.
Yeah, but Godfrey, I think it kind of is. We're about to find out.
I have a sort of answer, do you think it is, and why?
Because here's where I am starting to land on a lot of these things. Where I'm starting to land on these is that head coach, at least head coach of 110 of them, it's not an end point anymore. It can still be a resume line, and it perhaps is more effective as a resume line that doesn't have the end point. We all knew what was probably going to happen to Jeff Hafley. We all knew what was probably, unfortunately, going to happen to Mo Linguist at the end of the season. We all probably, you know what I mean? Like, but it's better to, it's better to get the head coaching experience and get out. As far my takeaway here is, it's better to get the head coaching experience and get out rather than getting put out, because that can get messy. You then lose control of your narrative. And there's some, I think it's just better to leave on your own terms. That's what I think this market is kind of telling me. That's the takeaway from me.
Okay. So I'm going to go through this and I'm going to kind of spoil it already and say, Richard, you're half right about how we should view the Mac. Probably. Because even in data collection, even in the idea of, hey, let's stop with what one agent told me on the phone and I bring it back to this podcast, or let's stop with just the feeling or the vibes, or hey, this looks a certain way. Let's just look at the coach hiring and firing information. All right. So that's what I did. I said, screw it. Because if I talk to one agency who reps more Mac coaches than the other, they're going to have a biased and a different slant on this. So what I did was I sort of took the idea of like, all right, from a coaching standpoint, is the Mac doomed? Now, what does doomed mean? It means you're not going to be able to attract good coaching talent because they know that they can't parlay the jobs. If you don't attract good coaching talent, you're not going to be able to recruit well. You're not going to have quality football. And then you're going to get into sort of this like self-sustaining spiral. That was the idea. That was the harbinger. And that was the concern. All right. So is the idea that the Mac is doomed solely because of a few head coaches recently have opted just to go back into the coordinator jobs at higher levels? That is false, technically. And I'm going to walk you through why. It is concerning. And it might be a harbinger for things and data yet to come. But as of right now, boys, it's actually just a repeat of history. I picked the Mac, as I said earlier, because it stays basically the same through the modern era. I've always defined the modern era as 92 on, when you introduce conference championships and divisions. You're a couple years away from the BCS. You're still in the Bowl Alliance. I sort of did that arbitrarily, mainly because I came up as a journalist in the Southeastern Conference. And when the SEC goes to East-West and conference championship game, the ripple effect that has on college sports begins to change things. I may go back in the future, I don't know, and recalibrate that based solely on like money television deals and postseason.
I'm not going but it's another podcast for another day, but you probably split it when the BCS starts.
Exactly.
But your point is well taken.
And on, like, when I got into the business full time, like, and became a national guy, like 92 still held a much kind of cleaner thing. It probably should be 98 when the BCS starts. Go Vols. We'll get to that another time. So 92 also dovetails with something that I have heard so often and read so often in the Nick Saban hagiography. By the way, that word never feels like I pronounce it right. If you haven't noticed, there's approximately 11 million books that have been written about Nick Saban's now completed time at Alabama. And one of the more eye-rolling instances in these books is how there's always this sort of like instant and sympathetic view of Nick Saban going to Toledo as a head coach and leaving after one season. He goes 9-2. He leaves for one season. Everybody remember where he went off the top of our dome? NFL guy, you want
to
tell me?
Cleveland Browns to be the defensive coordinator of
for
Bill Belichick.
So this guy's worked his entire career to become a head coach. He gets a job in Toledo, Ohio, kind of catty corner to Kent State where he played. He's from West Virginia. So just to paint a picture here, this is how this is sort of treated by history. And I'm going to read a quote. I don't know where the original quote comes from. I think it's from local media in Toledo when he leaves at his press conference, but I pulled it from an old Saturday Down South blog because I couldn't find anything in the newspaper's database. Growing up in West Virginia, Saban had witnessed the glory years of the mighty Cleveland Browns. Boy, these sentences are funny to read. And knowing that he was going to be a part of that staff was an emotional moment. Quote, "I haven't cried in 18 years since my dad died, and I've been crying all afternoon," Saban said. Okay. All right. This isn't that different than what just happened with the head coaches of Buffalo and South Alabama and Kent State, all right? So he left Toledo after one season in 1990. And again, that kind of dovetails with my 92 theory. Bill Belichick was his friend. He was hired as head coach of the Browns. And by the way, I want to point something else out real fast. Belichick was hired on February 5th, 1991. 8 days later, amidst signing day, Saban bolts. This is not convenient for his employer at Toledo, right? Like, this is a bad time of year to do this. I want to point that out because in the 2020s and the 2010s, as the coaching carousel has started to just sort of like blend into the regular calendar, there was this idea that we used to do business a different way. We didn't really. It just gets publicized more often and it happens a little bit more frequently. So what I did, please God, never make me do this again. I looked at every single coach hired and fired from 1990 until 2024 at every single MAC program. I looked at every single one.
He is about to read the phone book.
I'm not going to read the phone book entirely, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to break this up and my co-host can see this list. I created a red list of any time there was a defection. In other words, a sitting head coach went to coordinate. And guess what happened in the 90s? It happened a good bit.
So let me ask you this.
In the 90s, the MAC was, yeah.
Let me ask you this before you get going. Do you separate in your head going from head coach to the NFL versus going from head coach to anything else in college?
Well, I'm going to ask you guys to react to that because there aren't a lot of these defections. Sure. They're notable every time. And there's two that I want to add some context to because Richard touched on this very briefly. So Nick Saban goes to the Cleveland Browns as a defensive coordinator after a 9-2 season. All right. A guy named Mo Acne at Bowling Green goes to Purdue as a defensive coordinator a year later. Now, here's what you see in the trend. Mo Acne at Bowling Green, he was 20-31-3. He was a losing incumbent head coach who had been there for a while. And as Richard alluded to earlier in his theory, things just weren't going to happen. So why don't you beat the posse out of town? That phrase, beating the posse out of town, happens a lot at mid-major levels. All right. Another guy named Paul Schuettle. And Paul Schuettle, I didn't know his name until I started researching this show, is unique because he and Nick Saban are the only winning coaches to leave for non-head coaching jobs in the entire history of this, like, 34-odd years that I picked. Paul Schuettle was 60-48-4, you know, not great, but technically winning at Ball State. He left to be the OC at Illinois. So to answer your question, Richard, he did that, by the way, in 1995. Does this look good? I don't know. I would proffer up one school named Central Michigan University. If you want to embarrass a university historically, this is the one you shit on the way out. There are two coaches who do this in the 2000s, in the millennial era. A guy named Dick Flynn, who basically beats the posse out of town and resigns to go be the linebackers coach at Indiana after a losing record.
I think I know who the next one is.
His successor is a guy named Mike DeBoard, who goes to Michigan as a special teams coordinator in 2003. Now, Richard, NFL again. This is where I'm going to stop and pose your question back to you. In between those two things, in 2003, there is a not young, never young head coach at miserable Kent State who has a 17-51 head coaching record. His name is Dean Pease. He is at Kent State forever. He has 17 wins and 51 losses. Do you know where he goes in 2003? To become the defensive coordinator for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. Richard, if for some reason someone's listening to this and they truly don't absorb or read about or care about professional football, explain who Dean Pease is.
Yeah, so Dean Pease is, he was most recently with the Falcons, right? At the end? He was most recently with the Falcons in 20.
He retired with the Falcons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Retired with the Falcons. Defensive architect, defensive mind, known for being pretty aggressive and has had some absolute bangers of defenses. The Ravens defense that won the Super Bowl, the last one with Ray Lewis. The Titans, the ones that were like the one seed, I think, the ones that were the one seed a few years ago. And obviously the Falcons a couple of years ago, which, you know, your mileage may vary on Falcons and playing capable defense. But what Dean Pease and Nick Saban have in common is they both worked at Navy with Bill Belichick's dad. Bill Belichick worked at Navy for years. He literally wrote, well, the book on modern scouting, well, modern at the time, scouting of football players. I have it. It's an interesting read, and is kind of like the phone book. If you want to pick it up, you can get it on Amazon. But it is.
I dusted off and I did dust off. Have you read An Education of the Coach by Halberstam?
I never have.
About Belichick. No. I dusted it off because I thought the Falcons were going to hire him in that offseason cycle. And, you know, while some of it is probably excessively flattering, it is a very, very interesting read on like how that specific coaching tree was established.
But he wrote it basically. Steve Belichick wrote it in the 60s. And for a it is interesting to go back and read it because it does really read like a textbook. But it's funny to me that Dean Pease and Nick Saban are two linked. Like Bill was like, oh, we work with my dad, can scout players really well, obviously. Bring him in. You know what I mean?
And by the way, doesn't necessarily have a stellar resume at the time. They're head coaches. They're in the MAC. Okay. So at this point in time that I just rattled off to you guys, I'm going from 1990 to about 2003. Now, I know you guys were like, I don't know, alive or not, youthful, whatever. In this time, the MAC is not really a culture that head coaches come from. There are a couple. There are two in the 90s that go on to what we would call P5 jobs, technically. Ron Cooper goes to Louisville. Richard, at the end of the show, I want to talk to you about Ron Cooper because I'm just going to throw out a phrase to you. Are you ready? So just put a pin in this and ask me when I'm done. Black Gene Chisholm.
Nobody has,
okay?
Just nobody has ever put those words together English language ever.
I invented this.
And that's from Eastern Michigan.
Yes. You also have a guy named Randy Walker who goes to Northwestern in 98. Now, there are names that start to create the MAC energy and coaching. Jim Grobe, Gary Pinkel, and a young man named Urban Meyer. All right? They go to, in order, Wake Forest, Missouri, and Utah. Two in 2001 and 2002. This is when, now this is amidst, again, guys running away from Central Michigan. We've got head coaches becoming coordinators in the NFL. And no one really thinks anything twice of it. Then a thing happens that changes the MAC, I think forever, at least our perception of it. I'm going to do this really fast, and I'm not going to name all the places they went and when they did, but starting from 2004 until 2015, almost every single season, I think with the exception of one cycle, you have Terry Hoppner, Indiana, Brian Kelly, Cincinnati, Brady Hoke, San Diego State, Turner Gill, Kansas, Butch Jones, Cincinnati, Mike Haywood, don't stop me, Alex, goes to Pitt, technically, Jerry Kill, Minnesota, Tim Beckman, Illinois, Daryl Hazel, Purdue, Dave Dorn, NC State, Dave Clawson, Wake Forest, Dino Babers, Syracuse, boom. I'm going to pause there. This is the run that agents, other coaches, media, and fans suddenly take to be a perpetual constant. So I just rattled off this litany of coaches that fill out all these jobs. Now, if you notice when I did them real fast, there's two trends. Really, really good G5 jobs that are like a San Diego State or Cincinnati, but mainly Big Ten and kind of north side-ish ACC jobs. They are filled out by the MAC. This becomes an expectation. And honestly, boys, a little bit of a constant. Until, Alex, I want to mention two gentlemen. In 2015, there's sort of an aberration, an error almost. Because I just shot you through a decade where if you win consistently in the MAC, you are going to get a P5 job. It's almost a guarantee, right? It's almost a guarantee. There are minority coaches in that list. There's one, two that I can see just on top of my three. There are coaches with Midwestern D3 backgrounds. There are coaches who were career coordinators at the P5 level. If you win in the MAC, you're going to get a head coaching job. This becomes the thought, all right? Then Dan Enos leaves Central Michigan. Again, no one's going to get cucked like Central Michigan in this story. I'm sorry. Dan Enos leaves Central Michigan to become the play caller at Arkansas in 2015. And the aforementioned Pete Limbo, with a 33-29 record, goes to Maryland. And I believe his initial title, Alex, was special teams coordinator, was it not?
You're exactly right. And you're right that this is the glitch in the system. Like this is where it gets weird, because between Dean Pease and Mike DeBoard in 2003 and these two in 2015, you don't have MAC coaches leaving MAC jobs to go be not head coaches for like 12 years. And yes, you also have like a nice run for the league. Like they're the I think maybe the only quarterback in MAC history to hit it big in the NFL draft is Ben Roethlisberger around 04.
Byron Leftwich Eraser. Are you out of your mind? No.
Time out. You don't know what conference Byron Leftwich was in. Marshall's been in like 40 conferences. You got to check your records.
I did not. So just for the sake of the data collection here, UMass, Marshall, anyone who comes in and flirts with the MAC, I actually left out of this data study because I wanted constancy. The technical exception is that Buffalo is a current member, and I wanted to start this off because of the Pete Limbo hire. Buffalo in this time span is not a full-fledged MAC member because they're actually in Division II for part of this. But I did include that in the hire fire. All right. So what happens after Enos and Limbo? I don't think a lot of people think much of it. These are guys who are just sort of kind of floating, kind of dead in the water at their gigs. like not great, probably like eventually going to get fired to Richard's point. There are two, Richard, to back up in Flynn and DeBoard, who almost certainly are just beating the posse out of town, right? And then they're going to go take those middle of the road kind of like, I'm an on-field position coach at a what we would then call a Power Five school. Now, this is where my anxiety sort of starts on behalf of the MAC doing this job with you guys, working at SB Nation as a national college football writer. And this time, I rattled off that list of names for a decade, okay? I want to take you back to 2015, because as we record this, it's about 10 years later. This is how small the list gets. After Enos and Limbo, you have a guy named Matt Campbell, who goes to Iowa State.
From Toledo.
PJ Fleck, yes, thank you, Alex, goes to Minnesota from Western Michigan, which, by the way, is a huge move just because of the average quality of Western Michigan. Rod Carey goes to Temple in 2018. And that closes the decade. Entering into the 2020s, we have, as of this recording, one coach who has gone on to a P5 job. And I will point a couple things out by context. This coach, Lance Leipold, goes to a terrible job in Buffalo, arguably better than the two dead-end jobs in Northeast Ohio, right? Akron and Kent State. Performs a sort of minor miracle and gets hired by Kansas in a very unique situation, I would point out. He's in a dead heat against Army's head coach, Jeff Munkin. And this is also not really a true hiring process because they're replacing the fired Les Miles in a very sort of like late, almost like springtime hiring in that cycle. That is the last hire that someone has made out of the MAC for a head coaching job. Now, what has happened in the zeitgeist since then are Lewis and Lindquist leaving. So, this is where I get to Pete Limbo, a guy who didn't do great at Ball State the first time, right? Coming in and filling in at a meh job. Now, I think based off of this data, and I can pick a few things out from particular schools, the hiring of MAC coaches is slowing down tremendously in the way that we saw it, okay? Like 2008 to 2015 is a legitimate boom. I'm not sure if we'll ever see that again. And while I didn't do like a heavy data research on the 70s or the 80s, mainly because I didn't have the data available or the time, I don't know if history is ever going to hand us that kind of moment where whatever it is that you're doing in the MAC becomes valued by those jobs, right? The 90s were slow. I also want to point out real fast that the jobs that in that boom that those MAC coaches were getting real fast, as we record this in 2024, MAC coaches are not being considered the same way for these jobs. That's just not happening. So, for instance, the most recent hire at Syracuse, who shows up on this list a lot, is Fran Brown. His reputation is recruiting based at the University of Georgia. Jonathan Smith is a sitting head coach at technically a P5 in Oregon State. All right. Ryan Walters was a Big Ten coordinator. Brett Bielema was a veteran fired head coach who already was a Big Ten head coach before he's hired at Illinois. And then Kirk Cignetti is a great example because he goes to Indiana the same way like a Terry Hoppner would have, except he comes from James Madison, which is technically, although it doesn't necessarily constitute his entire time at JMU, a Sun Belt school, but it's not a MAC school. And that's what I wanted to focus on.
I think
so.
Godfrey,
hang on. There's one thing before I open this up for discussion that I think. The head coach, the current head coach at Toledo, is the canary in the coal mine. Mm. If you are not familiar, his name is Jason Candle. All right. If he goes on after 2024 in the future to become a coordinator someone else, we are now seeing an honest to God decline, a devaluation of the position, and a true trend because he has a conference championship, which Lewis, Lindquist, those guys didn't have. All right. He also has a pretty significant winning record. And the other thing that I'll leave you with this is if you're going to be a head coach in the MAC, you need to go to Toledo. Nick Saban, Gary Pinkel, they fired a guy named Tom Amstutz. He's like the one hiccup. Tim Beckman, Matt Campbell. And now with a 65-35 record, you have Jason Candle. So boys, I turn this over to you. If Jason Candle is not a head coach within two more cycles at what we would maybe typically call a P5 program, I think the MAC has a serious problem.
Here's one thing. Can you be mid or above average in one of these MAC or Sunbelt or Conference USA jobs and move up anymore. I don't know that you can. You know, I think you've got to do for a couple reasons. One of them is the lack of visibility of the league, right? We talk about one of the smartest bits of coach search, coach search theory that I think I've ever gotten. I actually got from Mike Locksley, who's Maryland's head coach. And he said, coaches aren't hired anymore, especially for these big jobs. Coaches aren't hired anymore. They're elected. It's an election cycle. It's a beauty contest. It's a popularity contest. Okay. There is some of the sting taken out of it when you are just an okay to even quite competent, which it clearly, Jason Candle is clearly quite competent as a MAC head coach.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between being good, even attractive on offense, effective, etc. There's a difference between that and what PJ Fleck did, which is take a team to the playoff or the New Year's Six.
So to your point, I have a little bit of sort of like a subcategory I created here. In that hiring boom, I think being a successful MAC coach was a very sort of loose definition. We talk about PJ Fleck. Why? Because in my brain, he takes an undefeated Western Michigan team all the way to the Cotton Bowl and then loses to Wisconsin. And that's the kind of exposure we think now in the modern era that you need as a MAC coach. This was not the case in the previous decade-ish because Jerry Kill has a cup of coffee at Northern Illinois before he gets hired at Minnesota. Same for Daryl Hazel going to Purdue in 2012. Same for, there's a couple of guys on this list. Rod Carey is not at Northern Illinois for a long time. I think he is like four seasons, five, and he's not amazing. He goes to Temple. He's almost kind of a beat the band scenario in 2018. As you go through here, guys, there's a history 15 years ago of showing some promise for a couple years as a MAC head coach who's decent and then parlaying that into a job. This would be a fun time now, real fast. Richard, ask me what Black Gene Chizik is.
Well, before that, I want to get to another Black coach who's kind of sort of on this list. Ron English was almost Michigan's head coach in 2007. You know what I mean? Like, it's, and it hadn't done.
You, when we started this show, you said, hey, what about you take one of these and you bail out and you become a coordinator because you don't want to get fired, right? What I don't account for, and what I honestly, I'm not exactly sure how you could, is I have a list in every MAC school in this time period, retired, fired, goes on to a P5 job. In those fireds, so like Eastern Michigan, for example, Chris Creighton is 52 and 68, and they should build a statue of him in Eastern Michigan. Okay, in this time period, a bunch of guys you have literally never heard of, Jim Harkema, Rick Ransnick, Jeff Wood, all fired, everyone's fired except Ron Cooper, that guy that Black Gene Chizik. Ron English at Eastern Michigan kind of misses that window and ends up getting fired. There are several stories, to Richard's point, inside the MAC of you have to strike now. So there are some sitting head coaches currently. Mike New is 37 and 56 at Ball, Alex. Did he have chances potentially? Maybe. But was there a changing perception of these jobs where suddenly a 9 or 10 win season in the MAC just doesn't hold the same esteem? That's the part that I don't know if we can really answer because we're getting into this subjective space about what's valued.
I think that the program that tells the story of the MAC's decline in industry parlance in the way that it's seen is Miami more than any other. And you've already been over a lot of these names that explain why. But Richard asked the question, can you be mid in the MAC anymore and have people notice? I mean, Chuck Martin has been in this job for 10 years. He is a couple games sub 500, but he's been there for 10 years. He's a former Brian Kelly assistant, been in that job for a decade. He's won two conference titles in the last 4 or 5 years, had some very good teams there, and is clearly one of the better coaches in college football, pound for pound for his level. I mean, there's no question about it.
Yes.
You don't hear a sniff about Chuck Martin for bigger jobs.
No, he's right.
Not a sniff.
I'm not disagreeing with him.
Have we ever in the history of SCD, I don't know if we've ever on a coaching show for our subscribers even mentioned his name.
No. And you think about the school that he works at. Not only is Miami of Ohio, known for producing Sean McVay and a Harbaugh and having some reputation of like, you know, people who played football there and went on to big things in the coaching world. But Randy Walker, you already mentioned, went on to Northwestern, Rose Bowl coach at Northwestern. Terry Heppner went to Indiana, where he tragically did not get to stay very long. Bo Schembechler was at Miami. Bill Mallory then went to Colorado, was at Miami. This is a job that historically, Dick Crum to North Carolina as well, where he was for a lot of years. This is a job that historically, if you are decent at it for any extended period of time, you get a look. There's five or six data points since the 70s that say that since the 60s that say that happens at Miami of Ohio. But now you got a guy who has won two conference titles in the last, since 2019. So in the last 5 years. And
right.
How many coaches in college football won two conference titles in the last 5 years? And you don't even, I mean, there's not even a scintilla.
Well, if you pulled someone at a tailgate in the SEC, they might not even know who the guy is.
Oh, and I forgot Mike Haywood as well. Miami of Ohio, who was Pitt's head coach for 2.5 weeks and then wasn't anymore. Don't get charged with felony domestic violence. This has changed so much. And I think the proof is kind of in the pudding if you just look at this one school. Like you say that you need Jason Candle to leave Toledo to kind of prove that this is a trend.
Trend. Yeah. I mean, if Jason Candle if you look by coaching standards here, there's a lot of ways you can do this. Like facilities, there are haves and have nots. We know definitely what jobs not to go to. Don't go to Akron. By the way, do you know, like, so Akron is the most brutal technically, because at least like Sean Lewis does the thing, parlays, and now he's a head coach at San Diego State. So like all's well that ends well, whatever. It is a death sentence to be the head coach at Akron, like full stop. There's no fucking around on this.
I would disagree on which is worse. Like I think Sean Lewis is statute territory at Kent.
Richard, the last time they haven't had to fire a coach was 1973. When the coach just up and retired. And I couldn't, like, again, pulling the data together, like 1973, that's almost a decade older than me. So my entire lifetime, anyone who's worked there has been fired. By the way, do you know what Tom Arth, the predecessor to the current Joe Moorhead, by the way, 4-20. Joe Moorhead, one of the smartest offensive minds in football, is 4-20 right now as head coach at Akron as we record this. Alex, do you know where Tom Arth is right now?
Yeah, I believe he's in Joe Moorhead's hometown and mine of Pittsburgh, coaching like quarterbacks or something.
Dude, this is an interesting aside, and I don't think it provides enough data, or I think it's just an outlier.
NFL, to be clear.
Tom Arth goes from UT Chattanooga to as a successful FCS head coach. Coaches at Akron, I think, wins like 3 games the entire time he's there, like 3 years, something like that. Gets fired, goes straight, Richard, to the Chargers as the pass game coordinator, and is now the QB's coach in Pittsburgh. You want to talk about a better life? You want to talk about a cautionary tale for becoming a head coach? That's a great example. Clearly, the NFL values his expertise and knowledge enough to give him two basically like offensive assistant jobs at two different franchises after he has a disastrous run at Akron. That's the sort of negative appeal of some of these jobs.
Stephen, I think like I'm pretty well convinced from this data set and from talking through it that the Mac is seen as lesser than in the industry than it used to be, and that, you know, it's disrespected, that its coaches are disrespected, and that materializes in these coaches not getting a lot of bites for other jobs, Chris Creighton, Chuck Martin being great examples of that. Why, if you care about a Mac program, like if you're a fan of one of these programs, should you give a shit about this? I mean, ostensibly, one way it could show up is that it's going to take a hell of a year for a Mac team to ever get the one spot in the playoff if it's disrespected like this as a conference. But if you're a Miami fan, you probably don't mind. It means that your pretty good coach has stayed for a decade instead of bolting to Northwestern or Indiana or Pitt or what have you.
There was, I am at least old enough as a national or formerly like a writing on a national level to remember the other crisis that was happening, which was Maction was too successful. It was too fun to watch on a weeknight. And so they maxed out the inventory on weeknight games with ESPN. That creates a dissonance on campus. You never really have that Saturday home college football vibe. But also the second part of that,
Eastern Michigan, for instance.
But the other part of that was that the coaches are there and gone, there and gone, there and gone. There was this feeling previously in the MAC that's like, okay, we got this young dynamic head coach and we're gonna have like a 9 or 10 win season. He's gonna like win the division, maybe the conference, and his ass is out. And we're gonna do this every 2 years. And what do we know about hiring coaches? No one is successful 100% of the time. Toledo came close. All right. Toledo came really damn close. But the sort of reverse has happened. I think to answer your question initially, Alex, it's you sort of have to self-manufacture your own pride here. I don't think you should be concerned the fact if you're Ball State that you're or sorry, Miami of Ohio and your head coach is stuck around. That's great. What concerns me is the next time you have to hire a head coach at Ball State or Bowling Green or one of these schools, the quality, the pool is going to be shallower. And I think that's where you should be concerned. Yeah. The one thing I want to point out here to bridge this back into the national landscape is this. When the MAC is doing PR, the MAC is going to tell you Nick Saban coached here, Urban Meyer coached here, Brian Kelly coached here. Okay. So let's throw in those are three coaches. Two have national titles. The other one is coached in multiple national title games. All right. Do you know what the other thing they have in common is? They didn't coach in the MAC and then go to those jobs where they won the national titles. They didn't. Okay. All of them went somewhere else first. In Saban's case, NFL, then he goes all the way through Michigan State, takes you to LSU, right? Kelly moves on to Cincinnati. Cincinnati is going to be a key thing on what I'm about to say. That obviously, if you didn't know, Urban Meyer does not technically go to a P5. Utah was in the Mountain West at the time. That takes him to Florida over Notre Dame. Are we losing the middle? Is another question I wanted to ask you guys. Because when you scroll through most of these guys, because college football is hard, on the people who did get jobs, right? Most like Dave Clawson is an exception. He's a wild exception. All right. Jim Grobe is a wild. By the way, go to Wake because you're going to coach there for like 10 years and make a lot of money. But most of the situations, it's going to be Turner Gill. It's going to be Tim Beckman, right? It's going to be Jerry Kill. It's going to be very hard for your next job to be a good one. I'm interested because the guys that the MAC touts the most, those big headline names, they didn't go to a hard place to win, like Indiana football. You know, Terry Hopner going to a program where it's like, that guy's going to get fired in a couple of years, right? Jerry Kill, Minnesota, he's going to get fired in a couple of years. Instead, they went to that next level job. What is the middle now? Where should these guys go? And that gives me the anxiety about a Sean Lewis, because Sean Lewis could not get a cup of coffee in interviews with places like Vanderbilt or Central Florida. And so he did the Deion Sanders stunt, which almost backfired entirely before he got the San Diego State head coaching job. Is this more a question of college football dynamics and not an issue with the MAC?
Godfrey, I think your question's been answered by the market. The new middle, the new waiting area between these two jobs is Power 5, high-level Power 5 coordinator. And it's okay. And it's the if it high-level Power 5 coordinator is now on par with some of these G5 head coaching jobs. Just is.
Not even high level.
Money-wise, it definitely is, right?
Level. Right. Middling level, too. But here's the thing, and that's where I get to sort of the point that I had at the roughly the top of the show. It's the resume line of experience. Once you've been a head coach, you've been a head coach. And there's benefit right. into having not gotten shit canned for myriad reasons. And controlling kind of your destiny there, which
so Mo Lindquist, for instance, didn't get fired.
Right. Mo Lindquist did not get fired. Mo.
Things aren't great at Buffalo this year. They did not have a good season in 2023. So in my mind, I go, can I turn this around before or even be decent compared to, because everyone's compare me to Lance Leipold, right? Who's a rarity. He's an outlier on this list. A guy who takes a shit program, does extremely well, goes on to success in the P5. That doesn't happen a lot of times on this list. It's like less than 6 or 7.
Also took a while for Lance, by the way. And also, by the way, yes. Lance is not exactly at one of the 15 Tiffany programs at college sports.
No, college he football. Had to beat down the door to get in the worst P5 program of the decade. Yes. So if I'm Mo, I'm thinking, well, I don't have to have fired next to my right. name. I don't right. have to have fired. And by the way, this particular employer is going to pay me better than I would be paid as a head coach.
Yes.
Money is a real issue here. The other thing I want to acknowledge quickly, I know people are, maybe they're sort of yelling at the podcast here, What about Portal? And what about NIL? And I try not to be a broken record about these things, but like we probably need a little bit more data, because one of the things I was going to throw out, like Richard, was, you know, we're feeding smaller, exceptional talent at small schools are feeding up, like a really good standout receiver is going to transfer up, right? A really good standout, whatever, is going to transfer up. What I'm really curious about is, are they transferring up one by one? Are they leaping up? So like, for instance, Albany has Jared Verse goes from Albany to Florida State. That's really bad if you're a MAC school, right? It would be great if you could go and step into the FCS and be like, I'm going to pull three talented guys up to compensate for my three guys who are going to the Big Ten. But when you see shit like that, it's like, we may get completely lost here.
You also can stick a pin in money, because what happened in roughly 2014-ish, and Clemson to me is like really one of the first ones to say, hey, Brent, hey, Chad, hey, we're going to pay you. Hey, Dave Aranda, LSU, we're going to pay you so much as a coordinator that you're not going to we're going to take that conversation off the table as far as you going to be a G5 head coach. So there's something to be said for high level Power 5 teams sort of taking the pipeline and nixing it sort of on the other end of it. You know what I'm saying? If everything's flowing into G5 head coachdom, you've got one part of it kind of being siphoned off because you're just chopping that off because you're just paying them so much.
Well, and the agents have told, I'm sure the agents have told you this too, Richard. Not only do you not have to get fired if you go be an OC somewhere, you're going to make $2 million or whatever. Let's just say you go coordinate for one of these schools and you're making more money and your boss gets fired. You don't have the same stigma. In other words, like, oh, I was a play caller here for 3 years. That's kind of how that's framed in context. It's not that I got fired as the DC. And now you can be replaced and you can fail at your job. But if your head coach gets fired and they clear house, the same stink isn't on you in the market as I was fired as head coach of this MAC job.
I also want to make, I think, an important point about how this filters down to players, because I think the same respect issue ultimately matters for the kind of players that you can get, whether you're talking in a collectives world or not. Khalil Mack was the fifth overall pick in 2014. Played at Buffalo. Khalil Mack is Khalil Mack. You know, I think Khalil Mack shows up at the combine, and I imagine people were kind of like, oh, that's Khalil Mack.
Urban Meyer raves about Buffalo came to play Ohio State. Obviously, Ohio State beat him by 50 points or whatever.
Yeah.
But Urban Meyer like raves about Ohio State, about Khalil Mack against his Ohio State offensive line in that game. It's actually really funny.
Sure. 5 years later, Max Crosby, Eastern Michigan, similar position, same NFL team for that matter, the Raiders for a while, comes out in the draft and he's a fourth round pick. Max Crosby had not the same like incredible college sack totals that a lot of the elite edges who have come out in the last 10, 15 years have had, but he had really good stats and he was also like a measurables star. And a lot of the draft looking analytics really liked Max Crosby a lot. And I think if you watched any MAC football in those years, you could see that Max Crosby on that gray field in Ypsilanti was like destroying people. Fourth round draft pick. I think you see, like, and I want to make that point about like the two of those edge rushers 5 years apart. Like, I think because when you start to look at like where did the MAC degrade in the minds of like the NFL and of the coaching industry, I think it was sometime around the 2010s. And I get it. Like, there's another player I think of, Sutton Smith, who was an edge rusher at Northern Illinois, who had like incredible college numbers, like was like a sack king at NIU. Over his last 2 years there had 29 sacks, but he was small. He was like six foot flat, two and change. And he was a sixth round pick and never had a serious NFL career. So like, I get why those words of caution exist even about like MAC talent, just because it's a different level of play. It's a smaller league, I think, than most of it, and then almost all of FBS. I don't know exactly how it would compare to, for instance, the Sun Belt or Conference
USA.
Physically,
physically small.
Yeah,
I think where this kind of gets,
I know there are some Conference USA schools that might be smaller.
Where this gets tough is that not only is this, at some point does the league cease to be viewed as a place where coaches can take a step up, and use it to go on to, you know, what everyone wants or what most people want in the business. But I think inevitably that has happened with players too. And I mean, Richard, we talked about it. Like, Leftwich was a long time ago. And that was, I did look, that was in years where Marshall was in max school. Roethlisberger was a long time ago. And you know, like when a couple of years ago, like Tyree Jackson at Buffalo or Logan Woodside at Toledo or Dustin Crum at Kent State or the Rourkes at Ohio, nobody is going to talk about these guys as.
But Alex, do you think any of those guys that you just not the Leftwich part, but like the that list of the recents moving forward through the next 10 years, it feels really hard to say that any of those caliber players, and let's not use Khalil Mack only because he is so exceptional. Yeah, who is the Eastern Michigan player? Well, let's use him. Okay?
Max Crosby,
the defensive one. Yeah,
so one of the best Max edge Crosby. Rushers in the NFL now and has been for a while.
Does Max in 2026, it feels like there's just no way he finishes his collegiate career at Eastern Michigan.
Chance. No chance.
No chance.
No chance.
Khalil Mack, unless he goes to.
Unless he just loves Ipsy.
Khalil Mack.
Like, just loves
Ipsy. You know, there's a difference between guys who are okay or maybe they're injured, yada, 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 and then their senior year they go crazy. Khalil Mack has the NCAA career record for tackles for loss. That means you didn't just do it for 1 year. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and again, like Khalil's just so sure, exceptional. Yes, I wanted to be a little closer to the earth, but all right. Just again for larger context, every name that we rattled off here, if you're trying to sort of keep it all straight, and we can post this on the Substack. There are, from the time that I picked the Nick Saban hagiography, just sort of as a starting point in the modern era, there's 21 coaches who leave the MAC and they become a head coach somewhere else. Almost all of them are technically P5 in this era. There's a couple exceptions. Or they're real good G5s. Like Utah was a good G5. Cincinnati's a good G5, right? 21. 10 leave for other coordinator jobs. Some are exceptions, like we pointed out, and some are to beat the posse. And some are just these guys in a funk. I think there's three categories of those 10 defections. Like Dean Pease is a fucking defensive genius. It's kind of been proven. And he goes to work for the greatest defensive mind in the NFL of the era at its peak. 2003 New England Patriots, right? Mm-hmm. So that one you don't argue. A couple of these guys are just, again, trying to make Central Michigan feel bad about itself, I guess. And then some are just sort of fed up and petered out. The reason why I think Enos and Limbo coming back to the MAC just feels so exhausted is that they just sort of existed in the mediocre, in the mid. I also find it interesting that neither one of those is a dead-end program. Kent, Buffalo extremely hard. Kent, Akron dead-end. It's not like that. This is Central Michigan. They had Brian Kelly. They had Butch Jones, right? This is Ball State. Those two guys in the mid-20-teens sort of shrugging and moving on, I feel like might have set this silent trend in motion. Now, what's fed it is money and the idea that you can be a coordinator, because I think, Richard, honestly, we should hit it one more time. The money is the money is the money. And if you can lead this life somewhere else and make even more than you were as a head coach, it devalues the proposition. And now in the modern era, roster management is going to be an absolute beast. Now, ask me about Black Gene Chizik. Yeah,
please, God, take us home on Black Gene Chizik.
I'm going through and I'm looking at these guys, like as these guys parlay to other jobs, you have success in the MAC, you become a head coach somewhere else, right? Congratulations, Gary Pinkel, Jim Grobe, whatever. That I expected. These guys who fled to become like a linebackers coach at fucking Indiana or whatever had a bad record. That I expected. In December 30th, 1994, I'm now reading from an Associated Press report in the New York Times archive. A black head coach in 1994, this shit is about to be a unicorn on top of a unicorn, has a losing record at a shit pot program, Eastern Michigan, never has a winning season, and becomes the head coach at Louisville. All right? This is where it is fun to dig through the archives. This is just the first two graphs, three graphs of the story. Ron Cooper, who revitalized, I'm making finger quotes right now, revitalized Eastern Michigan, was hired as coach of Louisville, head coach of Louisville, replacing Howard Schnellenberger, who went to Oklahoma. Cooper is 33, signed a five-year contract with the base salary of $100,000. He is one of five black head football coaches in the National Collegiate Athletic Association. This is in 1994. Cooper inherited an EMU program that went 6-26 in 3 years. The Eagles went 4-7 in his first season and 5-6. Richard, you have found it. You have found the black head coach in history who got the benefit of the doubt and the Gene Chizik treatment and got a better job.
He didn't get the Cam Newton.
I never thought
this
thing would. I never thought this would happen. I didn't think it had happened in history. I am shocked. He did get fired by Louisville.